Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. December 1953. Dwight David Eisenhower, the newly elected president of the United States, hero of Europe for his conduct of the Second War, at the United Nations made a speech that we remember as Adams for Peace. It intended to introduce to the American public education at schools and in gatherings why atom bomb was not scary, to be clear that this was a great rosy scenario for the future. Atoms for Peace. It eventually led to the building of nuclear power plants, the first one at Shippingport, Pennsylvania. I had a Dell model of it, and I remember celebrating my 12th birthday by finding the $7 to buy it. However, it is now more than 70 years later, and Atoms for Peace must take into account that there are revelations about building nuclear power plants. One is cost, another is accident. There have been several scary accidents, and there can be more. Fukushima is the last, most recent. And the third is putting power plants in battle zones such as Ukraine and Russia is dangerous to everyone, not just the combatants. Those are things we've learned about nuclear power. At the same time, we've learned that the other part, atoms for war, didn't go away. Or as The Economist puts it, in a leader that is recommending the U.S. and its allies augment the nuclear arsenal with a new generation of nukes, the nuclear de-escalation that followed the Cold War is over, the Pentagon warned this month. I welcome Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. Henry, atoms for peace. The irony, of course, is that atoms for war are here one more time. How did we get here, Henry? What were the mistakes made, or is there a way to correct it? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I think the optimism of the Eisenhower period that somehow it would be nice if nuclear power could be seen as a countervailing phenomena to the military buildup that we were engaged in that focused on nuclear weaponry, not only in the United States, but what was frightening is that it was beginning in the 50s in Russia, had an eye towards what was conceivable, but not a critical measurement of what was practical and what would happen. Mostly the policy was promoted on the prospect of what might happen within a decade or two, rather than what was possible and practical in the immediate on the ground. And so the argument was, well, nuclear power might become possible a decade from now in the 60s, and we need to prepare now for this. And if we do, the good atom, might even crowd out the bad atom. They even had an idea of, well, if we contribute and spend money to make fuel for power reactors, maybe we can even do it with the Russians. Both of our stockpiles wouldn't, for military purposes, wouldn't grow. All of that did not happen, obviously. I mean, there was an enormous buildup in Russia, an enormous buildup in the United States, even with the prospect of nuclear power that finally came online starting in the 60s. Now, today, the irony is by sharing nuclear power technology that previously was classified before 1953 with lots of countries, we now have the prospect of Iran using its power program as the basis for getting a bomb that will, with any bad luck, excite the humors of Turkey, Egypt, maybe the UAE, Saudi Arabia to get nuclear weapons. Again, on the basis of what they've learned to make electricity from nuclear power plants. And a lot of those countries have nuclear cooperative agreements with the United States under the moniker Atoms for Peace. So we're kind of in a trance still about what we're doing.
You've written for Persuasion Magazine, the history of Atoms for Peace, and I'm wondering if you found a date or a time or an event where what seemed to be utopian and dreamy about the future that is us, they were dreaming about now, when it turned dark and gloomy. Is there a moment?
Yeah, I think there is, actually. There was a guy named Ambassador James Wadsworth, who was really a man who was a civil servant. He read the literature of academics and came to the conclusion that the basis of the Atoms for Peace program, which was, well, we need to divert production in Russia so they don't have enough nuclear material to get, I don't know, several hundred or 1,000 bombs that would wipe out 100 American cities, was a very mistaken way to look at the nuclear threat. And he said, you know, just one weapon diverted from any of these plants or that goes off in an accident would be a disaster. You don't need to imagine that you need 100, several hundred or several thousand before you get a strategic result. That was in around 1956, and it helped propel the effort to negotiate what eventually became the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty that was finalized in 68. I'd say that was the beginning of at least some recognition that there's a problem here, that if you divert even one bomb's worth from any facility, military or civil, and it's fired in anger, you could be in tremendous, tremendous trouble.
The nuclear arsenal that the Economist magazine is endorsing to be expanded, was that part of the thinking that we were going to have a second, a third, and a fourth generation of nukes?
When you say nukes, you're talking about nuclear weapons?
Yes, nuclear weapons, yes. Did they imagine?
There was a very cynical view that if we did a public relations campaign to say Russia and the United States should make joint contributions, we could force the Russians, who had less production than us, into a disadvantaged position, because our fissile material production, even in the early 50s, was so massively greater than theirs that we could lock in our advantage and make their production anemic. Of course, the Russians never contributed anything to it.
Right.
And it was an idea, it just never worked. The Fissile Material Cutoff Treaty was another attempt to do the Atoms for Peace. They referred to the Fissile Material Cutoff Treaty as the logical projection of the follow-through of Atoms for Peace. We're still negotiating that, man. No one's bitten into that. And by the way, it's not clear that that treaty makes a whole lot of sense, because it allows you to make materials for the peaceful production of power, which, of course, can be diverted in a moment, as we're seeing in Iran, for military purposes. So it was just a hot mess of thought.
And what we conclude then, and there's no end to this, Atoms for Peace remain, is the public is now apprised that Atoms for Peace was a masquerade, or does it believe still in the possibility of Atoms for Peace?
President Truman once said, the only thing that's new is the history you haven't read or don't know.
Right.
And I'm afraid all of this is going to be news to people, because nobody understands what Atoms for Peace was about. And so, no, I don't think anyone's come to the opinion that Atoms for Peace isn't a great idea. If anything, it's still being pushed in the IEA and the U.S. government, and in the Russian and Chinese government as well.
Henry Sikalski, Non-Proliferation Policy Education Center Executive Director. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.